Hello, friends. Welcome to the End Evil podcast. This is Chris Jansen. Evil is the destruction of freedom. Welcome back. This week I have for you a continued journey as I share with you excerpts from a book I'm working on called The Book That Changed My Life. And excited to share that with you. Hold on just a moment. Sorry for the short pause, friends. I wanted to talk to you about some upcoming events I have coming on the podcast. For folks that want to meet up, I'm planning this get-together next week on Monday night, and it's going to be called End Evil Connect. And if you want to get in on this, go to my website, endevil.life, and go to the Contact Me tab. And you can find my email and let me know you're interested in End Evil Connect. We're going to meet on the first Monday of the month. And if you don't make it this one, we'll try the next one. But the idea is to create another mastermind, a group of people that care about truth and freedom and natural law and want to work towards that end in a collaborative environment. So if that fits the bill and something you're interested in, connect with me and we'll get set up for that meeting. But without further ado, welcome to the show. And I'll pass it on to some pre-recorded material that I've done this week. And I'll see you guys at the end of the show.
Hello, this is Chris Jansen. Welcome to the End Evil podcast.
Hey there. Today I'm going to read a chapter. This chapter is called Truth. Truth is the foundation. It's the bedrock. Everything else, your opinions, your systems, there's scaffolding stacked on top of it. But if that foundation's cracked, the whole thing's ready to collapse. So if we're serious about growth, about breaking cycles, about leaving behind humanity's same old mistakes, we have to stop clinging to beliefs that serve comfort over reality. We've got to tear it all down and rebuild something solid. That's where epistemology comes in. Big word, simple meaning. How do we know what we know? It's like flipping the first page of a manual nobody told you existed. Epistemology asks the hard questions. Is this true? How do you know it's true? Can it be tested, proven, or is it just belief dressed up in fancy clothes? And once you start pulling on that thread, you realize we never agreed on principles, universal rules that don't bend depending on who's in charge or what's trending. I'm going to read the first sentence again there. And once you start pulling on that thread, you realize we do need agreed upon principles. We need agreed on principles, universal rules that don't bend depending on who's in charge or what's trending. As Jeremy Locke put it, principles are truths that create freedom. Not opinions, not preferences, truths. They're the compass in the storm. They connect the small stuff, the microcosm, with the massive forces at play in the macrocosm. Once you understand how they link, you've got direction. But make no mistake, this isn't some easy stroll. It's not checking a box and calling yourself enlightened. It's about questioning everything, every belief, every hand-me-down ideology, every system that shaped how you see the world. Because here's the thing. Most people out there are running on autopilot. They inherited their worldview. Never stop to ask why. Truth requires pulling back the curtain and seeing who's stacking the deck. And if you really start thinking about it, you'll find yourself staring down the barrel of something heavier. What does existence even mean without objective truth? What happens when there's nothing solid underneath? The answer is simple. Chaos. A world where nothing makes sense. Where science crumbles, logic folds, morality dissolves. Everything becomes subjective, unstable, no common ground. Ironically, when people claim there's no such thing as truth, they're making a truth claim. They're standing in midair, denying the ground beneath their feet, but still expecting it to hold them up. It's a contradiction that doesn't hold water, like a cup with no bottom. It's no longer a cup. And the human mind, it hates that. It craves something real, solid, predictable. It's wired to look for order. Because the alternative is terrifying. A free fall into the void. The great nothing. That abyss where there are no rules, no structure, no meaning. And rather than face it, people cling to the belief systems like life preservers. Doesn't matter if they're false, as long as they feel safe. But here's where it gets dangerous. Because modern belief systems, materialism, consumerism, call it what you want, have figured out how to exploit that fear. Offer easy answers, quick fixes, distractions, to trade real truth for comfort and convenience. Keep people numbed out, scrolling, consuming, avoiding. And the subconscious knows. Deep down, it knows there's something more. A vast open space of untapped potential. But to step into that space, to claim that freedom, it means dropping the lies. It means staring straight into the abyss without flinching. It's like climbing a mountain inside your own mind. You're going to hit points where the path disappears, where turning back feels easier. Every step forward means shedding another false belief, another borrowed opinion. And you'll see it all around, those bandwagon beliefs, the trendy ideas everyone's hitching themselves onto, thinking they've found the truth. But it's dead end. Comfortable, sure, but empty and deadly to the soul. So here's the question. Are you ready to leave all that behind? Are you ready to put in the work, face the discomfort, tear through the noise, and find the truth? No matter how hard the climb gets, because truth won't chase you. It's waiting at the top or hiding in the crevices, waiting for you to be ready to see and hear it. And it's up to you whether you make the climb or stay stuck in someone else's game.
Are you going to try again? Are you going to try again? Go up the left side. It's the old Indian face. He's on his feathers, his headdress, his mouth.
Hey guys, today I'm going to read a chapter called Natural Law. It's the center, this is the core central theme of all the work I've done from the End Evil podcast to the book that changed my life. Natural law is the main theme throughout. And this chapter, I've kind of kept it short, but as I reread it, I added this note. Your conscience knows what's up. Listen until it hurts to hear. That's truth calling. It also occurred to me to ask the question, what makes a movie or a story engaging? When you really think about it, the emotional content, the fear, the anxiety, the concern for people's safety or well-being or their relationships are the essence of every drama or movie that we engage in. And those are all based on the actions, either moral or immoral actions of others, and its outcome and how those things affect reality that make a story or a movie engaging. So natural law is not just the cornerstone of my work, it's the cornerstone of all drama, fictional or non-fictional. It's the aspect of reality that engages us, that that makes life interesting. So our age, our modern age, is pretending that law doesn't exist. And we do that by sacrificing the real thing itself for a cheap substitute, which is man's law. So that's enough introduction. Let me just read this chapter, Natural Law. You don't need a book or a priest to tell you that there's order out there.
You feel it, the rhythm beneath the chaos. That's natural law. The non-man-made pre-existing condition of reality itself. It's not something conjured up or in courtrooms or scribbled in dusty scrolls. It might exist in those places, but that's not where it begins. It's not what it is. It's the blueprint beneath every interaction, the invisible hand that governs outcomes between intelligent beings. No exceptions, no loopholes, no special favors. Every thought you think, every word you spit, every move you make, it all ripples out, collides, and carries consequences. It's as cold and beautiful as the drop-off below, that cliff. You jump, you fall, it's simple. Let's tear these words apart. Nature and law. Nature, raw, untamed reality. It's not just trees and animals. It's the whole structure. The DNA spirals, the storms, the beating in your heart, and the beating heart in your chest. It's what is, without anyone's permission. Law. Now that's the principle. The binding force that ties action to reaction. Law means rule. The terms of engagement no one escapes. And together, you got a truth deeper than dogma. Reality has a built-in justice system. Lex Rex. The law is king. That phrase dropped like a hammer in the 1600s from Scottish reformer Samuel Rutherford. He flipped the old idea on its head. Used to be Rex Lex, the king is law, meaning the ruler calls the shots. But Rutherford knew better. He said no man, no crown, no government sits above natural law. Law rules supreme, not some tyrant. That seed would later influence revolutionaries, those who refused to kneel, because they recognized the real authority wasn't on a throne, it was etched into existence itself. You can confirm this law in a thousand ways, a million ways. Watch how your actions affect your life. And your emotions, watch how they affect your life. See how a lie corrodes trust. Notice how violence, unchecked, circles back to devour its sender. Every action births a reaction. Every cause drags an effect behind it like a shadow. You can't outrun. What you put out in the world doesn't vanish into a void. It ricochets, reshapes, and touches others, whether you realize it or not. The universe doesn't miss a beat. It records everything. And once you wake up to that, really see it, you realize the weight of responsibility resting on every choice, every moment. Natural law isn't just floating in some abstract ether. It's written into your existence, tattooed onto your soul. Lex Rex wasn't just an idea. It was a reminder. Kings fall, empires crumble, but reality's laws don't bend, not for anyone. Now, I thought a good addition to this chapter might be to kind of point and mention to someone the work of whatonearthishappening.com that really brought light to me the phrase natural law and what it means in the context of its importance, and also to define love. When I speak the word love, what do I mean? I often refer people to biblical passage, and I don't... say that lightly. I don't want you to subscribe to a religion, but there are some passages in the Christian Bible that are worthy of being repeated and understood. And 1 Corinthians 13 is one of those. And it goes basically, as I remember it by heart, love is patient, love is kind, love does not boast in the wrong, but rejoices with the truth. Love does not envy, love is not rude. I repeat it a little bit there. Love is not selfish. Love is not rude. Love does not rejoice in the wrong, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures, perseveres all things, and love never ends. So to me, that's the best definition I can come up with for love. And it's the essence of the good side of the force. That which is not hate, that which is not any form of stealing, and that which is contributing to the growth and the creative process of all life. And it's important to remember that humans are working on a different slightly different realm of existence than animals, just as animals are on a slightly different realm than plants, and plants are on a slightly different realm from minerals and such. So it's one of the modern confusions with understanding natural law or even love is when people confuse the way that animals act with the way that humans act and try to compare the two as if they're the same thing. And that is, no, they're not. They're different. Even monkeys and gorillas are on a very different living experience than that of human beings. And just look at the context of reality and the things we're doing and the choices we're making compared to the things they're doing and the choices they're making. It's a very different sphere of options and choices and mental processes we're going through. That is very clear. So when I'm talking about natural law, I am very specifically aiming towards human interaction. Not to say that how we treat animals isn't important. It's important how we treat the planet, the trees, and even minerals, but and all in a different, slightly different way. But the most important, and in context with the reality we're in, dealing with this slavery problem, is human-to-human basic natural law understanding needs to be prevalent, understood by most of the population for us to reach a higher level, a better level, a more peaceful, less traumatic level of existence. And that's the essence of why this book is being written, why I'm doing these conversations with you folks, and why we really all, there's a weight, a responsibility on all of us to work on this project in some form or another. The one great work. Thanks.
All right.
That's pretty decent. So this chapter I'm going to read today is called The Tesseract. I've played around with this concept. I've been very intrigued by this concept of the hypercube. The hypercube is a multi-dimensional square, basically. It could be different dimensions. There's cool noises because as the boats go by in the water, it's splashing the various logs around here in the water. It's kind of a trip. But what I'm saying is that a tesseract is a 4D, four-dimensional cube. And some of my work, I've taken apart the word and noticed that tesseract can also, if you look at the etymology of those words, it can also mean a four-dimensional light ray cube, which to me really is interesting because of the fact that we have these devices, these boxes, these various technologies that are exactly that. They're a square or a cube, and within them there's realms within realms in infinite dimensions, like a video game, multiple levels all projected in this one little box. So the concept to me is very interesting. But thanks for joining me today, folks. This is the Tesseract from the book I'm writing called The Book That Changed My Life. It should be available in 2 months to purchase. The Tesseract, a four-dimensional shadow cast down onto our three-dimensional world. It's not just a cube, it's a cube inside a cube, each vertex connected, each face folding over into higher dimensions we can't fully grasp. Cubical cells bending space in ways that stretch the mind. Try wrapping your head around that while staring up at the night sky. It's like the universe laughing at your smallness, daring you to think bigger. The Tesseract isn't just a math problem. It's crept into pop culture, showing up in places where power and control dance just beneath the surface. Marvel turned it into an object of ultimate power, a cube holding unlimited energy, a gateway to warp space and time. Madeline Langle, I never know how to pronounce her last name, A Wrinkle in Time, called it a way to fold the fabric of reality itself, leaping light years with a blink. Salvador Dali even threw it into his painting, Corpus Hypercubus, crucifying Christ on the unfolding net of a tesseract, mixing spiritual sacrifice with geometry.
Wow, that train's loud. What's up, train?
That's the train of thought.
little pause from the book there.
Salvador Dali even threw it into his painting, Corpus Hypercubus, crucifying Christ on the unfolding net of a tesseract, mixing spiritual sacrifice and geometry from a dimension we can't see, as if hinting that true understanding lies just beyond our reach. These symbols aren't random. They're the flattened, dumbed down walls of a hyperdimensional prison. Your thoughts confined inside, each wall built from belief systems, social norms, dogmas, and doctrines. Religion used to be the architect of those walls. Governments took over the blueprint when old gods lost their grip. Now, it's not just pulpits and thrones keeping you in check. It's algorithms, media feeds, science stamped with corporate logos. The new religion is scientism. They don't have to chain your body when your mind's already locked up. Hollywood slips the narrative into your subconsciousness. Schools teach you to memorize, not to question. Medicine tells you health means dependency, not sovereignty. And all these towering institutions, the cathedrals, the court buildings, the corporate offices, they loom like monuments to the Tesseract's power, built by the labor of people who will never benefit, casting shadows over the masses who unknowingly laid their own bricks of imprisonment. We are living inside the magical hypercube. It's the news, the banks, the laws, the man's laws, the ideologies, all pressing in from every side and projected from the cult of our society's dreams. They shape perception, they rewrite history, and steer your reality, all while you're distracted, kept busy and docile. But the thing about the Tesseract, it's just a projection, an illusion cast down into our dimension. It can only trap you if you believe the walls are real. I want to add a sub note there that, you know, we all are trapped to some extent, believe it or not, but I'm not sure how that's going to be. Because even if you don't believe that the walls, you know, if we all don't believe in these systems, it breaks down completely. But just as a singular individual, even if you know and see the walls, that does not necessarily mean you're completely free. So maybe I need to add that somewhere at this point. I don't know. Tell me what you think. The Tesseract sounds fancy, like some sci-fi relic you picked up from the comic book store, right? Put Marvel fanfare down for a second. This isn't fiction. It's an old word traced back to tessera, meaning four, like the four sides of a die, a cube, a token. And tucked into that word is actino, a ray, a beam, the spoke of a wheel, a cube of light, a box of beams. But we're not talking geometry. No, this is a control device, a spiritual muzzle, a mental trap disguised as a tool. Picture it, a cube that doesn't just sit still, but radiates, emits frequencies, sounds, lights. Ever seen one of those? Ever spent hours hypnotized by one, thinking it was entertainment? Now imagine something worse, a box you can't see, but you're born into it. And every day, the world places it back on your head like a trained handler, slipping a bridle on a horse. After a while, you forget it's even there. Its walls aren't made of steel or stone. They're the very constructs of your reality, your survival tactics, your habits. Its angles define the limits of your thought, its sides, the borders of your action. Each face of the Tesseract represents a method of mind-warping control, forcing submission without you ever realizing the chokeholds there. Let's run through them one by one. Yeah, and so the next six sections are covering the walls of the Tesseract. And this whole concept is kind of taken from a presentation I did called A Trap Within a Trap. And I'm going to read those to you shortly, but we're going to change locations. So moving on down the road, let's go on to our next spot.
Later, Lake Shasta.
Later, noisy bridge.
Later, log pile. Later, noisy train. It's called Bridge Bay over there, and that is Lake Shasta. And that is some blackberries, some manzanita, and the sun.
This is our trail. Garbage. Take one piece of garbage with us. Number one,
Resource enslavement. The air you breathe, the food you eat, the water you drink. Boxed up, filtered, rationed, and sold back to you by corporations with no face, no soul, and no conscience. Just profit margins and patents. Rivers run poisoned. Lakes dry up or get locked behind dams. The skies, once sacred, now chemical haze. Crops, genetically modified, sprayed and monopolized. And you? You're the product and the consumer. Bred to sustain a system that drains you while blaming you for the damage. They call it progress, but it's managed and engineered chaos, dressed in digital camouflage. Scarcity is not an accident. It's engineered. The illusion of lack is the leash. Environmental disasters keep stacking up like poker chips at a rigged table. Fires, floods, train derailments, chemical detonations, each one framed as a fluke. But step back, connect the dots, and it's not just climate change. It's a playbook. Disaster capitalism. Corporate collusion, globalist fingerprints on every so-called emergency. They profit while the world burns. And the next natural disaster, it might already be inbound to your town, shrink-wrapped in silence, branded with spin and justified in the name of order. Two, energy infringement. They sold you the lie that power is something you earn. You clock in, you grind out, you pay up. But the truth? Energy is everywhere. It's free. It's flowing. It's abundant. It's in the sun, the wind, the waves, the magnetic pulse of the earth itself. You were born into a planet bursting with power, but you live like a renter in your own home. Why? Because the system is rigged. Power isn't scarce. It's just controlled. They built cages around the current, wrap the flow in contracts, meters, taxes, patents, licenses. They hoard it behind paywalls and call it infrastructure. They flip the switch and your life goes dark. You think wars are about freedom? They're about the on switch. Nations don't crumble over politics. They fall for oil, for lithium, for land with wires running through it. Populations are shuffled like cattle, evacuated, relocated, eliminated, all under the sacred banner of progress. Here's the kicker. Did you vote for the power company to decide when your city breathes? Who gave them the authority to shut off your water, your heat, at the flip of a corporate dial, your life? Who decides when it's time for you to leave your home? Let's go deeper. Is your internet cable really an umbilical cord to some big protective parent in the sky? Or is it just another chain? Keeping you quiet and numb, entertained and obedient. Your devices, are they connecting you to your neighbor or pushing everyone deeper into their self-made digital cell where comfort is the cage and convenience is the warden? And your food, where does it come from? How many miles did it travel? How long till the shelves go dry when the trucks stop rolling? We live in a world where they tax you for collecting rainwater. Let that sink in. The sky cries and they claim it. You better ask yourself, where's this really going? And how long will you keep paying for chains that were once your birthright? Three, health tyranny. 2020 wasn't just a year. It was a global ritual, a psychological initiation into the new faith, pharma as God. And the script, slick enough to win Emmys. You're helpless. Your body's broken. Only the white-coated priests can save you. Forget the millennia of herbal wisdom. Forget the healers, the shamans, the elders who listen to the land. That was scrubbed, erased. Now it's injections, insurance codes, and digital diagnostics. Sickness by design, salvation for sale. And just like that, the whole planet flinched in unison. The headlines marched in lockstep. The routers fed the fear and people swallowed it whole. A lab-bred disease rolled out like a product launch. Right on schedule came the cure, also from the lab. Imagine that. Your immune system, no longer yours to trust. Your health, now a transaction. Show your paperwork before we hand you a coffee over a 2-inch thick plastic plexiglass partition. And the punchline? You're a genius now if you eat your dinner outdoors in a tent that looks exactly like a restaurant. Meanwhile, dust-masked clown drones shuffle 6 feet apart, eyes wide with faith in science that they can't define, defending viruses they've never seen from enemies they can't describe. This wasn't medicine, it was obedience training. And most failed the test without ever knowing it was being given. Number four, belief manipulation. From day one, you programmed. Schools, screens, pulpits, bedtime stories, all chanting the same hymn. Without authority, humanity collapses. Without walls, the world burns. It's the gospel of fear, and they drilled it into your head before you could even tie your shoes. You've already seen the movies, Mad Max, Gangs of New York, The Purge. Pick your poison. They don't even hide it. Anarchy equals chaos. Freedom equals bloodshed. But that's the picture they paint over and over. But pause the film. Step out of that script. Who's profiting off that fear? Who keeps that fear machine running? How many mental breakdowns, how many silent screams are echoing from people who spent their whole lives tangled in religious guilt, family pressure, that invisible leash called being a good person? You were taught that you were born a sinner, that pain was proof of your impurity, that heaven had a place for you if you just obeyed the boss, killed the enemy, or sold enough cookies. Yeah, cookies. Let's talk about school, that sacred factory of obedience, torn from your parents before your soul can even root, lined up in fluorescent lit cubicles. This isn't discipline, it's moral decay with a badge and a flag. They don't want thinkers, they want functionaries. They don't need wisdom. They need weapons who don't ask why. Number five is truth conditioning. Your news is a blood ritual, a 24/7 sacrifice to the gods of fear and division. Loud, constant, and deliberate. Every headline, a sermon of outrage. Every broadcast, a drip IV of sorrow, panic, and programmed hate. And you, eyes wide, heart closed, you've been trained to stop caring. Not in words, but in feeling. They sever the root of empathy and graft in a hollow loyalty. To flags, to borders, to skin tones and slogans and enemies so cartoonishly evil, you'd think you were watching a Marvel rerun. But this isn't entertainment, it's conditioning. Never in history have images been beamed this deep, this fast, this smooth into human consciousness. TV, movies, ads, swipes, flashes, likes, every glowing screen another projection. Another invisible wall built in a prison that you didn't even know was built. That's why I call it the Tesseract, the hypercube. It's not just geometry. It's a trap. It's a mind box made of projections, constructed from belief systems so old and so repeated, they've become caricatures of reality. These walls aren't brick. They're ideology. They're repetition. They're lies so smooth they feel like the truth. And at the center of it all, Disney. The dream machine, hijacking childhoods for generations. They don't just sell princesses and pirates. They implant synthetic expectations, plastic relationships, fake courage, and wish upon a star fantasy that substitutes your creative power with programmable compliance. It's a quiet conquest, a slow syrupy replacement of imagination with obedience. And it's not just the mouse doing it, it's the religions of today. The church of the state, the cult of medicine, the holy gospel of consumerism. You've been baptized in commercials, confirmed in political rhetoric, and fed communion from FDA-approved shelves. And through it all, they keep you distracted, arguing over actors, sports, and hashtags while they sculpt the bars around your psyche. Propaganda isn't just part of a war anymore. It is the war. And the bombs, they're made of pixels and processed sugar. They fall through your screens and into your fridge, into your thoughts and conversations. You're being carpet bombed with convenience. And every mindless product you consume, it's a bullet. One more hit to your soul's immune system. Every sovereign man, every truth-speaking woman, crucified, metaphorically nailed to the cultural cross, mocked, censored, erased for daring to question the machine. And still they whisper, die for your country, be a hero. But you have to ask yourself, whose war are you dying in? Who gets richer when your body drops, when your child conforms, when your spirit dims? Because the real battlefield, it's not overseas. It's between your ears. 6, technological usurpation. This one's the latest and maybe the deadliest wall of all. Slowly, quietly, it crept in until it became the air you breathe. Bots answer your questions. Algorithms decide your friendships. Your smart fridge knows more about your habits than your neighbor does. You talk to screens more than souls. Wearable tech monitors your heartbeat, tracks your steps, feeds data straight to the machine. Artificial intelligence drafts your future, replaces your labor, predicts your desires before you can even speak them. You want to swap out body parts for better ones? They're ready. Thinking about gene editing your next kid, making them more perfect? The tech is here. In every step, they sell you convenience, but take your humanity. What they don't tell you is that the more you welcome these systems into your life, the more you become a product on the shelf. A cog in a machine designed by machine. You aren't using technology. Technology is using you. This cube isn't just some theoretical construct. It's real. And it's wrapped around you like a second skin. But here's the catch. It's invisible by design. It exists only because you consent to it. Because we consent to it. Quietly. Every day. Barely knowing. The first step, see the box. Name each wall. And remember, no cage holds power over you unless you forget. We can walk through the door or climb out the window. The tesseract's not the prison. The prison is in the mind. The tesseract's just the program, the structure, the shape they use to hold the walls up. So the question is, how long are we going to let them? How long are you going to let them? Thank you.